Blog Talk Radio.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares to save a world in despair? Who really cares?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
25, it's going to be a black male in a white t-shirt.
There's far too many of you dying.
14 million more
you
Americans
know
would be
uninsured to find
next year. This deadly mass shooting
to bring the
loving
here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and kids here today. Oh, pick it light. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Welcome to Dry Bones Connection on Friday night. This is Antoinette, and tonight we have with us Brother Ashi, and I want to apologize to everyone for being late. I don't know what was going on. The system wouldn't let me in, and it was saying that it was having problems, but we're on now, and we're here, and we have Brother Ashi with us, and we also have Brother Ray and Brother Kwame. So, gentlemen, Brother Ashi, welcome to the show. I'm looking forward to hearing everything that you have to tell us about I Am. And so, folks, without any further ado, Brother Ashi.
If I may I interrupt here? This is Brother
yes.
Ray. I'd like to introduce Ashi Nehemiah. Ashi Nehemiah is one of the founders of the International African Movement, an organization that is very instrumental in not only in South Florida, but in this country, in this nation, and in this world. And I have the utmost respect for him and the work that he has done, and the tenacity that he has done it with. He was also a very close associate with Sister Denise Wilson L. And from her school of knowledge and his school of knowledge, I've come. So I'm just grateful and thankful that he's taken the time to share with you, Antoinette, and Brother Kwame, and this audience that you have, his thoughts. Okay, Brother, I see it's all yours.
Peace, everyone. Peace. Appreciate that, Brother Ray. Those kind words of acknowledgement for me, the person who is who's known as Brother Asi, to share with your audience. I thank the host too for inviting me to share with your audience, and I look forward to traveling a little bit here. I'm one of those persons who I like to slow down, and I like to get to the bottom of things. In my personal life, and to whatever extent I can, do so in my interactions with others, even exchanging words, especially when the exchanges that we are having pertains to the redemption of my people, the restoration of my people, and the protection of my people. I personally, I'm not comfortable with the kind of push button, you know, slipshod, you know, dibble-dabble, extracurricular kind of attitude that most people have regards my people. I've encountered very, very few people in my life other than my people who are not my people who really have proper regards for my people. And so even when I, and so therefore, even when I'm in exchange with my own people, I like to slow down. And so in that spirit, I'd just like to say, that, I think that it is time. I hope that it is time. I've been looking forward to that time for a long time, and I know that my people have been looking forward to that time when we move from looking at or delineating the pain, singing the blues. I want to sing some other song. I like the blues. Don't get me wrong. The blues allows me to blow off steam. To express my pain, but I want to sing a song that reflects something other than pain at some point in time. And when we're talking about Nenwe people of African descent, who are my people? Nenwe people of African descent is a particular people. It's not everybody. And it is not a lot of people on this earth who look like Nenwe people of African descent look like Nenwe people of African descent completely around this earth. There is no place on the earth where there are people of African descent that you won't find someone among them that looks just like Johnny down the block. Our head structures proliferate completely around this earth, our body types. Why? Because we were the first people to travel wherever man is on the earth today, including North America, where non-white people of African descent who are indigenous to North America remain trapped under the United States government. It is a people who have not to this moment in no international community, let alone on the Senate, on the floor of the government of the United States. We are a people who have not yet been acknowledged for who we are. And so we've kind of like just, you know, floated along, you know, hoping and wishing and praying, seemingly trying to twist the arm of this government to do what it's never done and never will do. You know, we seem to make a game of it, it seems to me. And so I'd like to slow down and look at this process because I want to affect the process. I want to change the process. And so I think what I'd like to see, and I hope, you know, with this kind of talk, that we can come to recognize that we have to become proactive about our interests, not just reactive to racism, not just reactive. It's good. It's a good thing to identify what you're fighting against. It's good. Keep your eye on it. Deal with it. But it's more important to identify what you're fighting for. When you identify what you're fighting for, now you fight with another kind of determination. You're not just reacting to the thing. Why? The white supremacist system has refined the process, has refined the game of keeping us reacting to it, us not having time or seemingly the interest in developing something to fight for. I remember a time in my lifetime, I don't know the ages of everyone on this radio program, but I remember a time when you heard the words freedom and justice coming from the throats of our people. It was regular from the platforms, from the pulpit, in the streets, in the music. Freedom and justice, that's what we want. Well, if that's true, and I know it's true because I remember hearing it myself. And when we read back over the history, I'm talking about recent history. When I talk about recent history, I mean the last 150, 200 years. Freedom and justice, the call for freedom and justice among this people was a refrain among our people up until now. We don't hear that anymore among the people, freedom and justice. And so if that's true, that means that our prior demand, the prior demand is far more significant than the contemporary demand. And so our people have the opportunity to look back at that, pick up on it. And one of the most significant times in the history of the United States that non-white people of African descent who live in the 21st century can get is the mid-19th century, when the United States government subsumed this people, that is, non-white people of African descent, under the Constitution of the United States, vis-a-vis the 14th Amendment, and told us it was something good for us. It's like pissing on me and calling it rain. That's what the 14th Amendment was to this people. And so, again, the prior demand of this people is far more formidable than the current demand. We can pick up on the prior demand have not been answered. We want land. We wanted land then. We wanted land from the very beginning of the United States. I don't know. I hope that I'm – is everybody all right out there?
It's all good. The land is ours to start with, but go ahead.
Yeah, so what I'd like to see, I'd like for us to engage. Everything cannot be said in these formats, these mediums, but hopefully enough can be said for us to make a commitment to some other kind of aggregation, meeting, union, place, time, whatever, so that we can talk about those substantive things that lend itself, that lend to the kind of coagulation of spirits, aggregation of will, determinations that can be placed strategically in whatever the media is now. It looks like the digital format is these kinds of aggregations seem to be. You know, back in the 70s, Bill Scott Heron made a song. At least he had this message that the revolution would not be televised. Brother, the revolution will not be televised. You won't see Spiro Agnew. Spiro Agnew was the vice president at the time. But, you know, some 50 years forward here now, in 2021, it does appear to some degree whatever revolution there would be would, in fact, be digitized to some degree, because most of our communications, it seems our affiliations are based on the degree to which we are using these electronic mediums to talk, to discuss. And so I would just like to, I'm going to make a final comment here, and I will turn the airwaves back over to the host. Self-government. Self-government for non-white people of African descent who are the indigenous African people in North America. Can range from the people in total having their own territory, from that to individuals having allegiance to the people yet remaining dispersed throughout the contiguous states of the United States. The logic of self-government for non-white people of African descent in the year 2021 is that self-government appears to be the only option for the people to gain protection. Whereas the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, enacted December 6, 1865, is purported to have freed the people. It can be argued that the people are indeed not free. And whereas the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, enacted July 28, 1868, under its Equal Protection Clause, is purported to have created protection for the people, it can also be argued that the people are indeed not protected in North America. Therefore, the first object of self-government by the people, of the people, and for the people is to provide substantive freedom for the people, freedom. And second, to create protection for the people. The 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was to ostensibly protect non-white people of African descent who are the indigenous African people in North America, but has failed to do so. And not only has the United States government failed to protect the people under the 14th Amendment, the government itself has proven to be the enemy of the people.
That's right.
By permitting both private and public interests and institutions to prey on the people. For 153 years, the people have been marching on a political treadmill toward freedom and justice in North America. Helpless and exposed to predators of every type, primarily because the people are subsumed under the jurisdiction of the United States by the 14th Amendment and are subsumed under the pretense that all peoples with citizenship status by way of the 14th Amendment are equal under law. One cannot mix unequal things and reasonably expect to get all things equal. One cannot mix unequal things and reasonably expect to get all things equal. Oil and water do not create a solution. Yet, by enacting the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States in 1868, bringing non-white people of African descent who are the indigenous African people in North America under U.S. law, that's exactly what the government of the United States pretended. And it has literally decimated the people. So goes the person, so goes the people. Persons are broken when the people are broken. And families are obliterated when the people are obliterated. In the mid to late 19th century, at the very juncture in U.S. history, when the government had the opportunity to resolve the plight of the people, that is, to acknowledge the people, to consider the people, and to provide the basis for the people to be protected. At that very moment, the government stood by and allowed private persons, nationalist militias, and officers of state under posse comitatus across the 11 southern states that had theretofore been in rebellion against the United States, as well as in other states, to displace the people from the land. They call it the Great Migration. Too soft a word. It's a deceptive word to simply refer to our people getting up out of the rivers and the bayous of this land, dispersing ourselves across this land. It's not right. It's not correct to simply call it a great migration. War was made on our people. Yes, that's the language that we should speak. That's the language of nations. Yes, that's the language. When you speak the language of nations, nations hear you. If there is a language of nations that has to be spoken in order to have an intelligent conversation between one nation and another, that language is available to this people. Yet, that undertaking, the displacing of our people from the land, we have yet to recover from it. Meanwhile, non-white people of African descent remain trapped in U.S. citizenship. And as much as it goes against the grain of the people's way of thinking to separate themselves from other populations who they share citizenship with, separation of national interests appear to be the only solution for bringing love, truth, peace, freedom, and equality, which is justice, to bear in the people's affairs. The people have tried trusting the United States government for a century and a half, only to have that government trick the people time and again The people have tried inclusiveness, where the people have suppressed their specific concerns in the interest of the concerns of all populations with whom they share citizenship, only to be run over and left in the dust of the road to a better quality of life. Civil rights, affirmative action, equal opportunity, diversity, citizenship, the New Deal, the New Frontier, a colorblind society, Keynesian economics, laissez-faire economics, a trickle-down economy, Marxist socialist communism, Negroes, black people, colored people, people of color, African Americans, are all relativistic terms, words, concepts that have not and will not serve to protect the people. It is now time for the people, the affected people, specifically non-white people of African descent, who are the indigenous African people in North America, a heretofore unacknowledged people, to be acknowledged, so that by way of acknowledgement, they are properly considered among peoples, not only of this land, but of the world. Only acknowledgement, beginning with self-acknowledgement, will create the vacuum that draws to the people that level of consideration that provides the basis for the protection of the people. I'd like to think that this is the kind of thinking that's proactive. It's not just complaining about what is, but preparing the way for what is to come. I yield.
That's what this program is designed to network, so that we begin to hear from one another, pick up what we can to keep moving forward. I know that most of the people who call into this particular program are looking to build, and as you said, restore our communities. And there needs to be a roadmap by which to do so. And there are many, many questions. What's taking so long? How come it hasn't been done? Well, these are some of the answers that we're looking for among our people now. Where do we go from here, and what do? We know now we're under attack, no doubt about that. We know now that we're being replaced in our cities by Europeans and others from other countries of lighter hue. We know that the country has been fleeced, as George Bush, Daddy Bush, said, that they had to check the fleecing of America. And I think he knew something when he said that was coming. But here we are now in 2021 with a decision to be made. Where do we go from here, and what do? So the floor is open.
Well, excuse me, Brother Ray. When you're ready, we also have a caller with their hand up.
Let them in.
Okay, just a moment. Area code 773.
Hey, peace and love, family. How y'all doing tonight?
Hello, right, Brother D.
Hey, yeah. I'm at work, so I just gonna make this real quick. In terms of our women, of our black women, not all of them, like I said, the ones that, you know, are pretty much in my circle, in other words, a lot of them right now are distracted with many other things and besides trying to find out what their purpose is in terms of building united fronts within the black community. You know, a lot of them, you know, they're not worried about doing any type of building. They're worried about getting a paycheck. They're worried about eating. And so, I mean, from the panel that's on here tonight, what advice, I mean, can you give me or to the brothers in terms of trying to, you know, get our women to change their mindset off that materialism and really focus more on family and community?
That's a good question.
Was that a question?
Yes.
Yes.
Brother, listening to your statement question, what came to my mind was how in this, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Why? Because if you don't do as the Romans do when you're in Rome, you won't eat. You won't eat.
Right.
Of course, by that, what I'm inferring there, by saying that is that economic imperatives, getting that money, achieving, finding that place that you have your idea the way you want to live. Economic imperatives are always the undertow to justice. Even to those who suffer from injustice, it's an undertow to them having the interest, the time, or the incentive to deal with that. It's extracurricular if they deal with it at all. You understand what I'm saying? And the system of white supremacy keeps us dangling and running in 50 different directions. You're 60, 70 years old before you begin to, sometimes before you come to understand the time that you wasted when it comes to paying some attention and rolling up our sleeves and getting busy with some freedom for our people. And it's usually left for the few, not only the women, all of us to some degree. Me too. I'm not excusing myself. I question myself as to what am I doing? What am I giving? After all, like tonight, you know, I'm sure that all of us on this call, we came from something else that we were doing because we're committed to something here. It's not until something happens that all of the people are doing it that most of the people will begin to do it. Again, I'm not excusing the women. It is through our women that we are most undone. Because, for one thing, it is the woman who shapes the nation, who shapes the people, who shapes both the male and the female. In fact, in our ancient societies, not only were the women paying attention to her seed, the survival of her seed, the woman was the lawgiver. The women are the lawgivers. Why? Because they are our first teachers. We begin to hear their voice even before we come into this world. The vibrations of their spirit will touches us most deeply, most effectively, and first impressions are the most enduring impressions. What you hear and feel from the very beginning charts your course for the rest of your existence on this earth. That's the power of the woman. And we've always given allegiance to that. And this is the reason why I've read great men say this, not just one. I've heard some of the great thinkers of our time, of the world, have made this singular comment that if you want to know a people, look at the women. Follow the habits of the women, you will know that people. And the non-white female being the whore for the white man. Most non-white females don't even realize that they are the concubine of the white male. Why? Because we are conquered by these people. We're conquered. We are conquered people. And the first prize of the conqueror is the female of the conquered people. She becomes the mediator, the conduit to controlling the people. And this is not rocket science. I mean, many of the scholars have written about this, about the role of the woman and the role of the non-white woman among us as a people, as far as her disposition toward her own son. In fact, the dissonance between the non-white female and her own son is the reason why there are so many non-white men in prison today. There's a level of neurosis and pathology that sets in between the age of 12 and 21 when a developing non-white male comes to find out that his own mama is not on his team. Okay? To the extent that that sentiment has actually come down to our people by the development of the word motherfucker. That word speaks to it from the old days. That's how the white man was identified, because the white man, the other woman's son, had more control over our own mama than we did. And it's a mental, psychological tug of war that takes place between the non-white man and the non-white woman on that level. Yet we try. Yet we do love. Yet we keep regenerating, which is a sign that God is with us, that we continue to regenerate in spite of the morass, in spite of the difficulties. But yes, brother, economic imperatives cripple most of us, actually. But I do believe, I'm confident, in fact, that once the people are awakened to the need that who we are as a people will come to the surface. In fact, that's why we struggle. That's why we are the ones who are so put upon, because the enemy knows who we are. They know that we are they. We are they whom it is written of. Come, let us deal wisely with them, for they wax strong in the land. Lest an enemy come upon us, and they join unto our enemy against us. That's who we are. Yet, our women are affected. In fact, all of us are affected in one way. We are the affected people. You know, I hope I answered in some way there.
Is my mic open?
Yep. Go ahead, Kwame.
Oh, good evening, Brother Shay and Brother Ray and Sister Antoinette and Brother Derek. The question you asked is, we got an echo. Question that you asked, the destruction of a nation begins in the home. And this nation has destroyed the nation of melanated people by taking and conquering the men and then taking the women. And what we're seeing now is that when you educate a woman, you educate a nation. When you educate a man, you give him something to think about. Because it is the, like my brother was sharing, it is the job of the woman to teach the children. But she has to be able to have that priority and that time to give to that. But when you take out the other parent, the male energy, and you remove that energy, then she has to take on a dual role. Then she has to be provider and nurturer. And so what we're seeing is that in this system of white supremacy racism, we've seen this, and we're living in this, because we've seen generations started from the University of Chicago when they created projects and being able to get people to live on top of each other, reproduce, and they killed each other. And then they came up with a system saying that if you want us to provide for your family, your man cannot be in the house with you. We will give you a check for the children, but your man can't be the man of his household. Because, see, a man has three P's that he has when he comes conceived in the womb. He's given a place of potential, protection, and possibility. When the male comes forth on the planet, he has the three P's again. He's to provide, to protect, and to profess. And if he can give that woman those three things, then she can nurture a nation. She can manifest what it is that we can take to our highest good. But if you don't have that ability, because Dr. Clark used to say, you tell a greatness of a people by three things. Number one, the brother was speaking on economics. Economics in any place on this planet begins with land. You define a people by land, water, and women. Because if you have those three things, you can build a great nation. Because the land will provide you the nutrients and the mineral resources and the things in which that comes from the land, because it's the mother. She is Mother Earth. She will feed and nurture her children upon her. Water, because we need water, because water holds memory and consciousness. And how do we reproduce ourselves? We have to have women, because she is the womb that brings forth life. So if we're missing one of those three things, then you have a destruction of a nation. Still on?
Yes. Yes. I'd like to just add.
Still here, Brother Smith. It got quiet.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because Derek was asking that, because that's the importance of what we're looking at when he was saying about how the women are feeling. And it's part in course by design, but it's part in course for us as men. We're having this discussion as elder men. And what we're seeing is we've lived and seen how this destruction came and unfolded. The thing of it is that we have to go back to, we have to Sankofa, go back and fetch that which is ours. And so we need to begin to train the boys how to be providers, protectors, and to profess. This is what's needed. We have to go, because a woman can raise a boy only to a point, because when she goes to the restroom, she sits down, and when the boy goes to the restroom, who's going to teach him to hit the water? She can't direct that, because she doesn't know how to show it. But the part of it is that male energy needs another male energy. This is why they call parents. The woman teaches the woman, the girl to be a woman. The man is there to teach the boy to be a man. And when you have that division in the absence of men, then she has to take on dual roles, being the provider and...
Brother, may I add to what you're saying, brother? And I believe, I trust this. I trust that, say, this people, the affected people, the people for whom I hold discussions, the people for whom I don't speak for no other people but my people. Not that I do not care about other people's. I believe that my grandmother raised me right, and that when she tells me that I am to respect all other peoples, I'm well capable of that, which is to say that when it is time to interact with other people, I'm fully capable of transcending at that time, of being conciliatory and, you know, engaging with all others when it's time. It is now time for us to be concerned about ourselves. John Henry Clark also said that that we should develop a selfish instinct, that is, to regard ourselves. So among our people, I trust that if we are in our natural habitat, that whatever the man is will be that man. And whatever the woman is will be that woman. We are not in our natural habitat. So I'm not afraid of the nature of the man or the nature of the woman, or that natural man that you're talking about there, a man who has a penis and the woman who has a vagina. I mean, I think that that's the way it is. I don't think there's no third situation here, although I'm told of late that there is, or that there's a possibility. I don't know. I'll have to see. I want to see. But I'm confident that the natural man, our problem is the social man and the social woman, which is determined by the environment in which the man, the male and the female, develops. Organisms are affected by the environment in which they develop. And non-white men and non-white women are developing in an environment that's unnatural. We are yet crammed into the tight spaces of our reality. In other words, we are not very far removed from crass slavery, and don't even know it, most of us. In fact, some of us pretend to talk about slavery in another time, and we don't even understand slavery in our own time. How pretentious is that, to be such an authority about slavery in some other time, and slavery, you know, you're a slave. And so, you know, developing in these concentration camps, and they got words for them, inner city dwellers, the urban core, you know, these euphemistic terms that allude to the people, right? These concentration camps, this education system. I mean, look at the media. Look what, of late, what I see ubiquitously in the media is this promotion of cross-fertilization of the gene pools now, the promotion of the mixing of the races. Why is that? I mean, what's up with that? There's some reason for that. I think that is a sign of something. But yes, brother, you're right. I believe, though, even there, once we, you know, it is often said that, quote, black people, I use the word black people very loosely. Very rarely do I even use the word black. And I wince when I do use it, but sometimes it becomes convenient among people who, you know, use that word. But it is often said that black people are like crabs in a barrel. When one try to get out and almost make it out, another one reach up and pulls them down. Why won't black people be different? And it occurs to me that, yes, that's what crabs are going to do, because crabs are not in that element. Kick that barrel over. Yeah, go ahead and kick that barrel over. And the crabs are going to be like crabs be. Well, that's what we want to do. We want to create a situation where we can, so we can see who we are, so we can take agency in who we are. And I believe that we will be able to promote and take agency in the standard of our people as to what the social man will be, as to what the social woman would be. And you see, it's one thing to be converted. It's another thing to be born. Okay. When you're born in it, then you don't have to be converted. You can, the possibility of conversion is there, though, because as a man thinketh, so is he. You can actually think yourself into, as the mind can see, your body achieve. And I hear that it is written somewhere in the Bible, be ye therefore transformed by the, simply by the renewing of your mind. Are you kidding me? You mean it can happen that quick, in the twinkling of an eye, in the change of your mind? Oh, yes. So I believe at that particular point, at that time where we are in our proper environment, that our social habits, that our social becomings. In fact, Millie Fuller teaches us. Millie Fuller is a scientist. He's still alive. He's a brother who has blessed us with his work dealing with codification of our situation. Millie Fuller advises us to be careful even calling ourselves men and women, social men and women. Why? The logic being that in a world dominated by white supremacy, non-white people are not allowed to develop into real men and women. And so we play a part in our own undoing by pretending that we are something that we are not. We become comfortable with this half man, this half woman that we are as subjects to other people. Any human that's subject to another human is a half human. What is that? What is that? So, yes, brother, we can look at ourselves and see all kinds of debilitations. I mean, we can be here for 30 years from this moment now delineating the debilitations of our people. And yet I believe that if we recreate the environment, our people can be born again. And you're right. What we want to do, and we've been talking about this a lot lately, those of us who have seen, who looked over and seen the promised land, you know, we recognize that what we want, this generation might not be ready. This generation has made intimations, and some of the intervening generations have made intimations. But that generation that is to do what is necessary to be done may not be born yet. In fact, we believe that that generation has to be born from the womb of our people, that the Messiah comes to the people and among the people for the people. And so that birth will come from this people. This generation seems to be already distracted. Seems to, I don't know, I can't say. But we're watching, we're on the wall watching for the, we're watching the clock of destiny on that one. But I have hope, brother, I have hope.
But could I add to that you just spoke on, and that
yes,
was
sir.
Very much on point. And the thing of it is that this generation, Frantz Fanon in White Skin, Black Mass, he says, each generation out of relative obscurity must either fulfill its mission or we will all perish. And so what we're seeing is this attempt for this genocidal process. But what we have to look at when we're speaking of our women, when my mother carried me in her womb, I was formed and I carried three generations. She carried three generations. From her conceiving me came myself, and then I and gotten married and impregnated. Now I have my daughter and son. And now my daughter and son have my grandson and granddaughter. Now my grandson and granddaughter have my great-grandson and granddaughter.
Oh, that's wonderful, wonderful.
But what we're saying right now is that this generation that we're looking at, and this is prevalent, and looking at the ones that are sitting there in pre-K and getting ready in kindergarten, these are the ones that we need to, because that's three generations that are getting ready to be reproduced from those that little girls and little boys are getting ready to become men and women, that we have to look at how do we guide them and ask them, how can we help you bring out your purpose and why you came on the planet to represent a melanated people. This is part of our thing as elders. We are to give them and stop being the generational thief. Stop thinking that we have to take what we know with us and to the grave. No, we are to pass on that part, what we've done, because we've both spoken of elders, Dr. Clark and other elders that have taught us that we need to pass on to the next generation, because what they come with purpose, is why they chose that man and that woman to come through in order to bring and do to help bring forth the purpose of what we as human beings are to be. And as a being, as a human being, what do we become? That's the question. What do we become as human beings?
That's right. And answering that question is taking agency in the principle of self-determination. What do we become? And by whom name, who are we? First, you know what I'm saying? Who are you? You know, whence cometh thou, and where are you going? You know, kind of thing. What are we to become? Who are we? And so, yes, I agree.
And Brother Ray and I were talking the other day, and we were speaking about, you know, being able to communicate. And the thing is that he has, what he talks about is doing the drumming. And the drumming is good because that was our first communication when we were conceived in the womb, because you said that we pick up the energy of our mother, but the first sounds that we picked up in the embryonic fluid was the heartbeat of that mother. And so that heartbeat gives you that being able to decipher what the drum beat is, because there's a frequency. The child knew when the mother's heart beat real fast that something was going on and it started moving around, or if the heartbeat was irregular. And what do they do with ultrasound? Now they've got it to where they invade the privacy of the child in the womb and listen to the heartbeat and decide and look in there and see what sex is it going to be. But the part of it is that the elders and grandmothers and great-grandmothers could look at the young women when they were carrying the child and can project what's getting ready to come forth. Cecily Tyson and autobiography of Jane Pittman. What was her famous quote when she saw a baby come around? Are you the one?
Yeah.
Are you the one? That was her famous quote. She was asking, are you the one? Because she knew that something was coming forth
was
going to be to help us. But what we've got to get into to the part of getting in that we are looking at genetics, annihilation. This is what they're looking at. And this genocide is to move into the gene. But what I've come up with the concept of the Overground Railroad. And the Overground Railroad, what is over this earth? Is the Milky Way. And as Dr. King says, the universe is bends towards justice. And what there is, there's a universal law, there's a cosmic law, and there's a natural law. We are out of order as these human beings right now on this Turtle Island has become out of order. And in other places on the planet, but most people that are living in their oasis. And I say oasis because we have, and you use the word urbanization and cities, another word for city. But what the urban means is that's why they gave it the name. You are banned from nature. We are people of the land and the sun. We are not concrete jungles. We do not thrive and come to our highest creativity and frequency because we're disconnected from the mother. We need to come back through the Overground Railroad, just as Harriet Tubman took us through the Underground Railroad to get us off the plantation, because we have the urbanization is the new plantation. So we've got to come out of that plantation and come back to nature and to these earth, because in the plantations are the deserts that we live in. They call them the hood or the ghetto or like Buttermilk Bottom, the different names that they used to have for them. But the part of it is that we have to get back out to nature where we find our oasis. And I use oasis as an acronym, OASIS. Our ancestor spirit is in nature, and it will be in service to us if we come back to her. She will provide us, because nature is the first community, and the animals know how to communicate. They don't need a weatherman to watch the Weather Channel. They know through instincts what's getting ready to happen. We've lost our connection, and what we have to do is through environment that they have dumbed us down, because if you ever Gabriel Monte is a psychiatrist, and he deals with drug addiction and that, and says is that the environment creates the addict. The environment creates the addict. We are environment that are not conducive to who we are as human beings, being melanated people.
Absolutely. And so the proposal is, I still have confidence that given the right environment, And that has to become an objective. You know, how do we free ourselves from the free people? How do we become unparenthetical with our killer, the one who has us so confused, such that each generation finds it difficult to discover its mission? What I do is like this, like us now. I try to get to the bottom of it, you see? How do we create that environment? What is it to be done to kick the barrel over so that the crabs can be in that natural element? Marcus Garvey, 100 years ago now, it actually was about 19, his heyday was considered to be 1919. By 1925, they had imprisoned him. But it was after the Red Summer of 1920, 21. Garvey had a crystal clear view of the global dynamics, the forces of history that impacted Ninhwe people of the world. And he got an up close and personal view right here in the United States. And Garvey said, as a result of his view from the catbird seat, the black man has no doors to which the white man has no key. That's the problem for the black man. He has no doors to which the white man has no key. And for that matter, any outsider who wants to set up camp to displace the people, to displace them physically from the land, to displace them from their customs, their standards, their social development, their way of life, and make them something palatable as some lump of labor for the industrialists and for this decadent society. For a while, our labor is no longer needed there. And so we now are squandering. And we're going to have to do something, because at some point, that which we recognize as the powers that be presently in the world are going to dissolve. All states of the world right now are nervous. All state powers on this earth, China too, all of them are nervous. Why? Because they sit astride populations with no borders now. Yes. State governments sit astride populations that has no borders. The people are larger than the state now. And at some point, the people will become unafraid. They will no longer be afraid to die. They will lose the fear of death. And so all states are aware of this development and are doing dry runs on how to control the populations. And so we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to think about our protection. And I agree, you know, everything that you said, brother, about, our situation is true. And I believe we can do something about it. I think that the task at hand is for us to do what I spoke about from the top of the show, is to look to take measures to protect the people. When the people are protected, then persons are protected. When the people are broken, such as this people are broken, then persons are broken. Persons, after being subject to these social situations, this development, this systems, all areas of people activity that are people engage in, being subject to the shenanigans of people who are our enemy. Think about it. It's like a child who has a parent that's kicking that child's ass every day. But because it's behind closed doors, nobody knows. And even when they see the adult with the child, they don't intervene because they don't see the parent kicking that child's ass. But that's the situation of this people under the shenanigans of the powers that we're under. We have to at some point recognize that if we're going to alter the situation, now if you just want to complain and march, cry, stop hitting me, stop. Basically, that's what we do in terms of our protest. It's just a message of stop. Don't you know I love you? I'm a good person. Stop hitting me. Why are you doing this to me? That's pretty much the response that we have to the system. But when we come to that point where we are able to say who we are and what our determinations are, and that we want what we want without war, we want it without violence. And of course, we know that violence always attends this kind of stuff, but we can't go in wishing for violence or expecting to use violence or asking for violence, even knowing that death will come. In fact, we have to come to a point where we recognize that we need some death in order to live, that death is a requisite for life at some point when we really move in this direction. But this is the seed that must be planted among this people so that this people will mature. And I believe that all these problems, all these things will be worked out. Malcolm, I think it was Malcolm who said it. It was either Malcolm or Kwame Ture, one of those revolutionaries from the 60s. I read this somewhere where one of these brothers made this comment that in the beginning, out of that, the early 20th century was the most developed period of the history of non-white people in this land. The early 20th century is the most pivotal point in the determinations of the people among the people that have brought the people to where they are now. Those determinations were made in and around the beginning of the 20th century, in the last decade of the 19th century to about the 1930s and 1940s. The determinations among this people then is what is which caused the ripple effect of the movement of the people around the world up until this point in time. And so that is why when civil rights was not wanted, civil rights was an action taken by the government because it had no choice. But there again, just like a century earlier, we are made to believe that civil rights was a benefit. It was a benefit less to us than it was to the system. It became an out for them, for something far more. They were running away from something far more ominous. Okay, and civil rights became the trick again to abate the people, for the people to feel like that they were now moving toward a colorblind society. And what that government was reacting to at that time was the impetus of the thinking that came among the people in the early 20th century. There was a determination that spoke about the people in terms of the people being a people. And it wasn't only here, it was around the world. And that impulse derived to many non-white populations around the world their own government, some degree of autonomy. And yet we are that population that have not received redress. We have zero autonomy. Not only do we have zero autonomy under the 14th Amendment, we have not had redress for having been the victims of colonialism and imperialism. Why? Because we were citizens of the United States. And so the United States government was able to escape paying reparations or making atoning for having held this people in this land the way that they did. I don't know. I hope I'm making sense here. I hope I know what I'm talking about. The reason why I'm talking about this is because I'm interested in solutions. I want to get out of the morass. You see? And the problem is that You cannot teach what you don't know. You can't leave where you don't go. That's logic. And the issue with this determination is that even though we speak of freedom, we have not experienced freedom. And so there's an element of risk that comes with taking these kinds of actions and making these determinations. Because there are no revolutions going on in the world where we can go and exercise revolutionary instincts and then come back and breed revolution among our people. It's, we are learning as we go. See? So we cannot act like we know everything. You know what I'm saying? Even those of us who, you know, talk, you know, hey, like I'm talking here. It may sound like I think I know everything. Far from the case. Far from the case. It's just that I slow down and look at things logically. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, brother.
Brothers, we have another caller with their hand up. I'm going to bring them in.
Sure. Sure.
Thank you. Area code 708. Area code 708.
Greetings, 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 family.
Oh,
I was on
Brother
mute.
Patty. Oh, okay.
Just listening and loving and came in a little late. And love it that I'm hearing solutions. You're talking about solutions, which is great. And I came in when Kwame was talking about in the womb and hearing his mother's heartbeat, which is a beautiful thing, which is correct and great. And it just took me to my solution that gave me a solution back in the day is music. And you know where I'm going with the music. Dealing with what Kwame was talking about and what we're talking about. George made a quote, pulling up the last leg of the pure thought. He said, be funk. You know, funk for me is a thought. So this is what we're talking about. In this relay so-called race, we're not racing around the track. We're elevating. So we have to pull the generations that have missed what we have to share up, so that they're able to fight this fight that's a spiritual war that we're in. Two, Brother Kwame mentioned getting back to nature. George said it's simple, mothership connection. The show is about the galactic ship of the mothership, but the actual mothership that we're on is the Earth. The Earth is a flying sphere. Is rotating around the sun. We're on a ship, the mothership, the connection, as Kwame said, is connecting back to the Earth. That's our connection to all of us, the Earth, the mother. So if we, again, the brother said it beautifully, you can't teach what you don't know. You can't lead where you can't go. So again, a leader is no more than one who sets an example. So again, the example that we're setting is no more than elevating our children, the youth, because they're trying to use technology and all this other nonsense as a diversion, as a distraction, which has been very useful as we see. But again, we're talking about what we're able to do with what we have. Use what you got to get what you want. Thank you, Mr. James Brown. Because for me, everything that we really need is in the music of what was laid out in the 60s and 70s, family. All of that is talking about what's going on, Marvin Gaye, right now. What's going on?
Yeah.
So with that, family, I just wanted to interject that using that third eye of a music connection to the nature of the mother, that beat of the heart, that frequency and vibration. Let's do it, family. We own
it. Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Much thanks and much love to you, family. I continue to listen.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Okay. I have a question for you. What led you to start? What led you to start this movement from being a firefighter to know, being a part of the movement that is so large. It's a, you know, a large movement that's not only in Florida, but it's, you know, it's grown, you know, across the states and everywhere. So what led you to, what led you to this, to even changing your name and everything, and not just changing it, you know, in words, but, you know, you did it on paper. You did it legally.
Yes. Well, what prompted me was, well, a lot of things. I'm trying to, what prompted me? Well, what we're talking about here on this call, this phone conversation prompted me in a general sense. I am the first generation of my people to be out of the woods. I am the first generation of my people to actually be out of the woods. I lived deep in the woods, southeast Georgia, off the Okefenokee Swamp. I still have people in the woods. I am an indigenous man. All of our people who live in the woods, talking about the earth, the agrarian setting, it is estimated that by 1930, that's 70, that's 90, that's 91 years ago, it is estimated that by 1930, 83% of all Nunway people of African descent had migrated out of the agrarian setting on the farms, growing potatoes, rice, hunting, living in the land, so people could walk out among the plants and know the medicinal qualities of plants and roots. We didn't have access to hospitals, yet the people attended to whatever illnesses, whatever problems that we had, the people had a way of dealing with them. Of course, when we shifted away from that en masse, by 1930, most of our people were in a urban, what was determined to be urban environments. I say that to give you, to start to answer, well, just to answer your question a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I have since become academic about my development. I've become academic about, when I say academic, that's about reading, about studying. I wanted to know the goings and the comings of my people in the record. And so I, the kind of, what you hear in me, I don't know what you hear in me, but whatever you hear in me, what you're hearing in me is a determination, because this is my land. I am of the land. And I am not pleased with the fact that people can come from anywhere up into my land and push me aside and tell me that I'm less of less value to them in my land. And so when I became a professional, got my degrees, you know, studied a little bit, I weighed things. I weighed things. And so I tried to organize professional people, people who had the skills. The professional people are the ones who learn things. But as I began to try to organize professional people, I came to understand what my elders meant when they say, you send a fool to college, you'll get an educated fool when they come back.
Yeah.
Because our people have become, they rank themselves, they assign status to themselves by the values of the education system that's provided for them. And you don't have to go to a white school for that to happen. The entire education system of the non-white people of this land was top down. It started from the top. And the reason for that is that by doing that, you can control the development of the people. And so I began to resist all those inferences and those things, because I began to walk through history and look at history through the eyes of my people rather than the eyes of those who even, I can read information by someone who is not of my people and know more about my people than the person who wrote about my people. Why? Because I know who I am. And I know who my people are. And I know my people are not everybody. When I say we, I ain't trying to speak for everybody. I'm speaking for my people.
Right.
I don't pretend to speak for others. And so, yes, sister, when I saw that I could not organize the professional people, we hit the streets and we began to organize whomsoever will. And there were some professionals among us, of course. Thankfully, there are. In fact, I met a very famous author in 1986, Dr. Carlos Moore. I don't know if you're aware of him. Dr. Carlos Moore is an internationally renowned author.
No, I'm not, unfortunately.
Yeah, Dr. Carlos Moore surfaced in 1986. He went underground immediately after Malcolm X was assassinated. He went immediately underground, as did revolutionaries around the world, because they recognized that event as a signal. When he surfaced, he began to teach and travel. He came by, and his brother tapped me on the shoulders. He said, look, don't isolate the professionals. Don't isolate the skilled people, even though they don't have the ideas of separating themselves away from their masters. Don't isolate them. Why? Because at the time that we become a people, we're going to need those skills. We're going to need the people, and the people will come home. And so I set about, acting on the understanding that we needed to have home, need to have a place. See, when you're in Rome, you got to do is Rome. It says, in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do. The operating word there is when.
Right.
When in Rome.
When, yeah.
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 When you're not in Rome, you do as you would do in your own home. But if you don't have a home, then you're always subject to Rome. So we have to think of this home thinking, a place for home for the people. Okay. And, yes. But anyway, yes. This is why that and other principles and things, and we became active. I mean, when you have that kind of intention, you become active. I mean, you do hundreds of things. I mean, you speak, you act, you organize, you pray, you go to funerals, too many funerals. I'm telling you, it's just too many funerals. But you got to go to those funerals.
Yes, you are correct about that. I agree. The last caller that you just heard, the gentleman that you just heard, that was Eddie. That's my co-host. And Eddie is our numbers man. Eddie breaks everything down to numbers.
Okay.
And so he does everything on the numbers. So he keeps us enlightened and updated on the numbers. Excuse me, my voice is cracking.
Beautiful.
Brother Eddie, did you have anything else that you wanted to add or say?
No, I'm actually sitting here taking notes, as usual, taking notes so I can put the numbers to the words. So, it's a beautiful class that we're in, and again, hopefully the people do the same thing. Take notes, get back to the old, the writing, the scribers. So it becomes spiritual on that paper. The paper is more than your antenna. So use this, because we keep saying we never know when they're going to pull the plug on all these damn shows.
Now
so
you're
come
talking.
On, man.
You see?
We can do what we're supposed to be doing because we got what we need. As I said, use what you got to get what you want. Stop waiting on everybody else and use what's right in front of you. Stop being lazy, because that's what it is when it comes down to it. You don't want to write because you're damn lazy. I'd rather record it, or I'd rather put it on a disc. I'd rather do something else so I can go back to it. No, damn it, write it down. That's your work. That's your part that you're supposed to do so you can see what it is that you're supposed to see right in front of your eyes, damn it. So with that, I'm going to sit back and Like I said, stop dropping the mic and pass the mic, or pass the mic with love, because that's what's been happening. We ain't been giving our youth the love that's needed and the words that they can hear, because, again, we hear them speaking a language that we really aren't familiar with, but, again, we could use that to captivate them or at least engage them, because once you engage them, you got them.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you got to have something that they are vibing with. And for me, knowing the numbers of the words, I got them. That's my hook.
And music is numbers, too.
That's it. All of it's numbers.
Music
that
is numbers.
Third eye is no more than a music connection.
Yeah. That's right.
And the connection is directly to our DNA.
That's
the 411. Dealing with the numbers of DNA 411, the 6, that's the information station that rides up and down on your spinal column. 33, another 6, damn, the DNA. It's right there. It's hidden behind all these damn occult words of English that we use, but we can break it down by number and use this back on them and kick they behind.
That's right. That's right.
That's my part. That's it. That's everybody's got a part. That's my part, to show us that we can beat their ass with their own occult language called
English.
That's
right. That's right. You remind me of this author, Melville Herskovitz, Jewish guy, Chicago, University of Chicago Press.
Okay.
He released a book in 1942 called The Myth of the Negro Past. It caused a furor in the literary world. It woke up a lot of people to scholarship that a Jewish guy would dare to make such empirical comments about us. And one of the things that he said is that in his travels, and he traveled extensively around the world, he made empirical statements about people of African descent, because he, in traveling the world, he identified the common traits among us, you know, the rhythms, the drum, and our capacity for God consciousness. And with regards to the capacity of God consciousness for us, he said that people of African descent, wherever they have gone on the earth, have been able to adopt the gods of the places that they went. And they would do so with such confidence in God that their thinking is that they'll take the God of their conqueror and conquer the conqueror with their own God. Woo! That's a deep belief in God right there, you know. And that was an interesting, like you remind me of that spirit that you just said. Now, you'll take what he has and kick his butt with it. You know, in fact, that's what this generation has done with English. When I look at this last couple of generations, late generations to come along here, who have taken the English language and have twisted that shit up, that even the Englishman can't understand his own language when they speak it. You know, that's what rap has become. You know, it's taken the form of communication of the enemy and using it, you know, in a way that even the enemy could not use it.
By using and pardon me for cutting in, but you just brought that to me, that's basically what it is. That's why they have now what's called an urban dictionary, because, again, the English language in and of itself, even old English, is very bland, you know. And we, our people, our beat, our frequency, you know, we put flavor, we put flair, we put spice, even when we speak words, a rhythm language that we get, with a rhythm that is our own. So again, that swag with the word that we use, when we use a word that was used for a baby's bed for a crib, and we start saying crib and word now, word up, and I mean, we use the vernaculars in a way, they try to figure out what in the hell are we saying. And it's just the way we looked at them back on American Bandstand and said, what in the hell are they listening to?
That's right.
What in the hell?
Right.
So that was telling us something there, that it was something unique within us that was not within them, that it took them decades to learn how to move and mimic and emulate us.
Right.
You know, so,
you know,
yeah, we're the people
that's what
the world
B-bop
has
was.
Been following and the world has been waiting on. And that's the conscious mind that is now at this
age
of Aquarius that is now waking up.
That's right.
So, yes.
That's right. That's what bebop was. Every so often a generation will come along here and shift it. You know, rock and roll, you know, bebop. That's what Diz and Train and them, that's what they said in the clubs from what I hear. I suspected it until I read it in Malvern Manning's book, the last biography of Malcolm X that he wrote. In that book, he said for the first time something that I had suspected all along but didn't really know until I read it in his book. And then I began to talk to other elder people who knew bebop, you know, who were a part of that whole movement of music. And the popular saying was that they started playing bebop to get the riffraff off the stage. You know, they wanted to let the pretenders know that you can't do this. They're just saying, you know, this ain't you, you know. and so they wrote a bebop in a very derogatory way. You know, what is that? You know, it's like, that ain't music, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the rest is history. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna ask a really foolish question. Don't y'all laugh at me. What is bebop?
Ooh. Go ahead, brother, you do it.
Now you go ahead.
What is hip hop?
Bebop is a form of music back in the day that basically came along during what I would say the era of prohibition, and during that time, during swing, you had swing, bebop, and different genres of music like that, along with jazz. So bebop was one of those forms of music at that time during that era.
The doo-wop.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well, doo-wop is another genre.
Is it? Right.
Again, it's interesting that you're doing that. You see, it's interesting that you even though you didn't know about specifically what bebop was, the fact that you are naming different styles of music, which means different eras of music, speaks to what we're talking about, how we're always stepping away from these folk, okay? And they're always following us. You know, I tell the young people today, 30 years from now, the only rap groups are going to be white rappers. You know, y'all will be doing something else. There'll be hundreds of white rappers around here, you know, like rock and roll bands now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I always thought rock and roll was white until I found out that it was started by our people first, and I did not know that.
Yeah, it's just like jazz.
That rock and roll was white.
You know, jazz, we came up with jazz, they took that, you know, and
that's right.
And made it modern jazz and fusion jazz and, you know, Kenny G jazz and, you know, Herb Alpert
jazz. And I like Kenny G.
I didn't say I didn't like them. I just said,
and David
again,
Cobb,
just
I
like you saying how it transforms from we starting it to them now being all over it. Just like, again, how in the hell is Justin Timberlake the R&B, number one R&B star? I think the last time I heard it was Eminem was the number one rapper. So how did these white people get into the genres that we started? Right. Imitating us.
They still everything.
Imitating
us. They still everything. Yes. And because they're thieves. I mean, they steal everything.
Yes. And this is the reason why, based on the same thinking, with the same kind of logic, the same kind of reasoning that you and I, that we're doing right here in this exchange, the same kind of reason substantiates us taking Jesus back. We need to snatch Jesus away from these people if Jesus is going to be functional for us. How can God be for me and my enemy? No, it cannot be that way. My God must be for me. You see? And so if we're going to be parenthetical with these people, even in that regard, as far as I am concerned, I'm not speaking for you or for anyone else, but as far as I'm concerned, I have a problem with these people appropriating Jesus when, you know, they don't, you know, when it's not them. It's an appropriation, you know, and so they have to be, that has to be made known in my view. Yeah. True. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We have to let them have that. If it belongs to them, let them have that. We can give our allegiance to a more benevolent order than that. It's all Rome anyway. The government is Rome. The religion is Rome. The education is Rome. Rome is the departing point for white supremacy. It was the Pope that gave in 1750, up until 1750, as early as 1515, it was the Pope who allowed what was called the Asiento de Negros, which was a contract to export people from Africa to other parts of the world. That was Rome. That same
was
institution.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm 1455 is when the papalist bull. That's remembering.
Yes.
Okay, that was 1455 that he gave that, because that was the thing in which he gave to Portugal and Spain, and said that they could go forth and conquer all of the heathens and take their land and kill.
Right.
And then
that type of bull preceded the Asiento, but the Asiento flowed out of that. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Right, and that's the part, because...
And it was in effect up until 1750. As late as 1750, the Asiento was still there. And so
it's still in place today, because...
of course it is.
But what you're sharing, the 13th Amendment, And that was the emancipation. And emancipation is a proclamation. It wasn't a law, because the amend, it said only neither slavery nor indentured servitude, except if you're duly convicted of a crime. This is where Jim Crow came in, and this is where the crime came in to reinstitute slavery. And they have not changed it. You get rid of the 13th and 14th Amendment, and remove the 3/5 clause from the Constitution, and then you have equal playing field in the law, because that's why I said when talking about universal law, cosmic law, and nature's law, man has made a law in order to submit people to his will and not theirs, because even in the Supreme Court being the third law of the land. And the thing of them saying in the Antelope case, which was before the Armistead case, in which the Supreme Court said that slavery is against the law of God, but not against the law of man. Because he knew what he was doing when he wrote into law in submitting the will, and you going from Rome, but Rome did not come into exist until they got taught by the people of Kemet. And you know, we just watched them raise what they're now putting in the media, saying is that the fourth great pyramid, because there were the three pyramids of Giza, until they now just opened up the great Egyptian museum. And how is it that an Irish woman and a Chinese man is going to design a museum of pyramids to house our ancestors? We got to know something's wrong.
Well, you're right. and that's why it's important, in my view, to know dates, events, laws, circumstances, persons that serve as benchmarks to our undoing. We don't have to prove anything. I mean, there's the record is there if the record is accepted. There are excellent reference points all right, right, to reflect on the present and what our task is, this generation, right? Each generation must, out of relative obscurity, discover its mission, fulfill it, or betray it. And that's, you know, I know you probably, I can hear that you probably do this all the time. I know that I do. I'm constantly questioning, what is it that I should be doing right now? Because this is not, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. A lot of things going on in my own life. You know, this being one of them, it's a major part of it because you can use your mind even as you do other things. You can think even as you do other things, but you still have to do those other things, right? And so not that I'm looking for a paycheck for what I do, for what we're doing right here, but you have to ask yourself the question personally, what is it that I should be doing? And what is it that I might be doing that's not productive or not moving me in the direction that I want to go? And so goes the person, so goes the people. How can we even think for the people? You know, even as we're thinking for our individual self, who are we to be thinking for the people? In fact, what do we mean when we use the pronoun we? Who are you talking about, really? You know, do you have a we? What's this constituency that we're referring to? Well, that's a question, too, that, I mean, that's something that I think that I find myself, out of respect for people whom I'm talking to, I want to know who are you. You know, who, you know, I want you to be quiet because I want you to know who I am, okay? And so, because that's important. You know, it's not that you would put down anyone from being whom they are, but we're talking about a population of people who need redress. We're talking about a population of people who are actually trapped in history, trapped in time, or they're trapped outside of themselves. You know, we're looking for home. We should be, I think. That is, if we would alter the situation, all this complaining we're doing. You know, if we're just complaining just to be complaining, but we're really comfortable with the situation, and, oh, you know, it's, you know, we pay some homage to blackness, you know, and, you know, whatever this, you know, whatever. If that's what it is, then that's just a ritual. You know, that's just something. But if we're serious about altering the conditions, then, you know, we have to, I know myself personally, I have to slow down and say, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? You know, why am I on this radio program? What am I looking? What's going to come out of it? You know, I will say this, that something has really come out of me talking tonight that I've shared the airways with you, my brother, that you've been able to, we've been able to parallel our think, you know, that we're in parallel in our thinking, in our perception, our perspective. And in order to get to that, you have to do some reflection on that, which is, you know, the history, the record, you know, the ones who've told, who've left the tales and the stories. Not all of them are believable. You know, history is just that. We weren't there. You know, we have to trust the stories that we hear from the sources that we hear from. I like the fact that, you know, that we have selected certain things and we have a common view. And I've agreed. I mean, I've enjoyed this exchange.
And I appreciate love you also, my brother. And it's said by our ancestors, behold the words of our ancestors. They are written in books. Open them and study them and read their wise counsel. And this is what Brother Eddie was saying, is putting down the words, because when you write, it frees the mind, because the subconscious will release other things, because we have an Akashic record and our DNA carries through the mother passing on the mitochondria, in that she holds the whole history of us as a human race. It's in her DNA, mitochondria. And so what we're looking at is, how do we activate that which is there trying to attempt to put to sleep or to dumb down? Because the thing of it is, we're born with our purpose in the womb. That's the place of potential, possibilities, and protection. And this is what we come forth with, a purpose, because we already chose that mother and father to come through, and that we know that it's already been a program put into our DNA to activate us, and we grew the vessel to move upon this planet, to go forth and do the will that we were sent here to do. And we don't die. We just rejuvenate, because old people will go and look at the baby and say, look, that's Uncle Joe. Look at them hands. Oh, look at that. She got ears like Aunt Mary, because they could see the return. And what we've got to be able to do is to give, what is it, Kareem Jabbar says, and he talks about the children. He says, speak of the children. He said, we could never dream their dreams or think their thoughts. We're the archers. And the mother and the father is the string and the bow, and the child is the arrow, and you aim it towards the bullseye and you let it go. If we give them the tools, they will build what they come here to do. And this is what each one of us are doing right now, in that our purpose is to be able to share what we're sharing, because it's something real important that we have to understand, too, about this black and white thing, because in any book, if you open it up, the letters are black and the pages are white, and the most important part is the black in what you read.
Yeah. All right, guys. You know, unfortunately, Brother S.A. said that he would afford us an hour, and he's given us an hour and 45 minutes. And he has, you know, obligations in the morning, so we don't want to keep him. So I say we want to thank you for coming and being with us. We want you to know that you're welcome back at any time. Just get in touch with, you know, with Brother Ray and let us know when you want to come back. And if you have any closing remarks that you would like to give us, we truly would appreciate it. We truly enjoyed you, and we thank you for being with us.
Right. Oh, well. Okay. I've enjoyed it, like I said. And I will close with the very first statement I made coming in. This meant my observation that we as a group, we are in a reactionary mode. It's understandable because so much is happening out of our control that we are only left to react. We hardly have time to become proactive. I mean, you have to put food on the table. We have to pursue our careers and raise children. And you know, now with the situation in the world such as it is, we're put upon at every turn. So it's difficult to be other than reactionary. But I think that those of us who talk the way we talk, who have this intent, these inclinations that we have to freedom, to justice, to making the world right, I think that we have to try at least to be proactive to our interests. And for me, proactive to our interests means carving out some space for ourselves in this earth, developing those doors so that we can have some privacy as a people. Every person have a right to privacy. Every person have a right to go behind closed doors and wash their face, or to enjoy their loved ones' privacy. So goes the person, so goes the people. Every people have a right to privacy so that they can clean themselves up, you know, so they can attend to those things that are detrimental to them, such as the things that we delineate so much. Thank you. I look forward to coming back.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Brother Ray, for bringing him to us. We truly appreciate you. You know we appreciate you, Brother Ray.
Well, you know, like I said, and I said, this is a networking show where we can network with one another and learn of each other and how we can work together for the common good and the common goal. Mm-hmm. And I see introduced me some years ago, all roads lead home. And I believe that, and I trust that we will all, you know, understand what that is. We don't all think alike, but we're thinking. and we're working. And the drum call is calling us to do just this together.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and I thank you. I see you for taking time. And I thank for everybody on your network, Antoinette, for chiming in. And
yes, we have someone with the hand as well.
Yeah, we all learn. I know I learn something every time.
Yes.
So,
yes,
thank you.
I've learned. I appreciate this. We have a person with their hands up. Brother Ashir, this may be a question for you. If you can afford us 5 minutes, you can let the caller ask you a question or make a comment to you.
Oh, all right.
Okay, thank you. Area code 336.
Thank you, Sister Antoinette. I just want to give greetings to your guests, everybody that had something to dedicate to this show. I'd like to dedicate this to my great-grandson, Jaden. I love you, Jaden, and maybe one of these days you will have the time to listen to this podcast. There's a lot of information, you know, that you can learn from. So this is dedicated to my great-grandson, Jaden, and thank you, Sister Antoinette, and thank you to the wisdom keepers on this show, all of you. I am so grateful to be on this planet, especially at this particular time. These are very interesting times, family, so thank us, thank us, thank us.
Oh, thank you, Sister Ashley. You have a question? You have a question or a comment for Brother Ashley?
I'm just grateful that he's on the planet. That's my input. You know, it makes my heart proud. He's pretty much answered what was in my heart to ask. That's why I just raised my hand, because I wanted to say to my great-grandson, I dedicate this to you, young Jaden. And I thank everybody who's participated on this program today. We need these kinds of knowledges. We may not see the seeds that we've planted grow, but it's coming in our lifetimes. It's coming, family, and we must know that, and we must keep the faith that this is going to happen. That's my comment, Sister Antoinette, and I thank us.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sister Paris. Well, Brother Ashley, I thought that was a question or a comment for you, but it was just accolades for you.
Bless you, sister. Bless you. Bless you. I felt your heart.
Thank you.
Yes. So we look forward to when you can come back and join us again. And as it, your day will be an easy one. That it'll be an easy one for you tomorrow or this morning. That it'll be an easy one for you. Not too burden bearing.
And thank you, brother. I'd like to thank the brother for sharing his knowledge, and, you know, each one teaches one, so I'm grateful for the lesson.
Yes. Wonderful, brother. Bless you, brother. And with that, Brother Ray will be our mediary. That brother right there, that Brother Ray, that brother...
Yes.
Brother Ray, that brother is to be really appreciated, acknowledged.
Yes,
that he's,
he is.
After all this time, that he yet serves the people. How about that? Serving the people that are not yet the people. You know, serving the people, waiting for the people to be born. Yeah.
Yes. And he hasn't grown weary yet.
Right, right.
I'm so grateful for that. He keeps working.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Okay, well, we'll be in touch.
Okay, well, thank you. And you have a good evening and a...
Likewise.
I don't know how to say it for tomorrow, but thank you for being with us.
All right.
All right,
peace.
Thank you. Peace. Okay. Well, y'all. I guess we should close this out. Does anybody have any closing remarks or anything that they want to make before we end this, before we close this out?
Remember to drum on Sunday.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Brother Ray. Don't forget to drum it on Sunday at 3 o'clock Eastern time, no matter where you are in the world, at 3 o'clock Eastern time. Need you to be drumming to lift every voice and for a change to be made on this planet, that the evil works, that they will stop. And don't forget Dry Bones at 10 a.m. for the Helios Vilios on Sunday. And Brother Eddie and I will be back with you on Wednesday. Correct, Brother Eddie? Yeah, he's still here. Brother
that
Eddie?
Is correct. That is correct.
Okay.
Wednesday we'll be back.
Okay. So.
I apologize to everybody for tolerating my snoring if I did. I've been up since 4 this morning.
I didn't hear you snore. I didn't hear you snore at all, Brother Ray.
I did go absent for a minute, but I came to.
But he was truly a great guest. He truly was very, you know, very knowledgeable, very understandable.
Well, we need to bring the brothers forth so they can bring the young brothers up.
Yeah.
This is not. They won't get out in the streets, and they're not getting them in the so-called school system.
No, no, they're definitely not getting it there.
But in my opinion, that's what all. In my opinion, that's what organizing will do. We will teach our own. We will grow our own. We will have our own when we organize.
Yes, did Brother Kwame send you the thing on the schools in Delaware, Brother Ray?
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
Did Brother Kwame send you the things on the education system in Delaware on the convention that was held in?
He may have. I'll have to look. See, I get so much mail. I can't get through all of it. And I get them. I'm trying to get them as I can. So I'll go look for Kwame. And I'm sure that he has.
Yeah, Brother Kwame, did you happen to send it to he said, Brother Kwame, did you happen to send it to Brother Ray? Brother Kwame?
He either got his mute on or he stepped away from the phone.
Yeah, it must be both. He must have got his mute on and walked away. Well, Brother Ray, let me know. If not, I will send it to you. It was really interesting. Brother, did you get it? It had to do with the educational system and how it was a demand for, for money, for funds and everything for the black schools.
I have
because
to check
they were
that,
saying the white was the Europeans were saying that we did not want to be educated.
Not under their system. And this has been my cry all along. We know what their system is, so why do we tolerate it and continue to force our children into their system? Do our own system. Finance our own system. That's the problem that I see, that we refuse, absolutely refuse to finance our own cause. And for folk like me who refuse absolutely to take money from the people who are oppressing us. And I believe that because whoever controls your sustenance controls your will. So that's why we have a boule, because they follow the money. They're being paid to be who they are. And, let them be. But we have the power to not be what they are and who they are. We can be our own people. We can raise our own schools. We can finance our – we got the money. We just won't put it together. But that's what reorganization will do for us if we ever decide to do it.
Yeah.
Can I add this right quick, Brother Ray? You're right on point, but one of the things with the organization is a mindset from these scared-ass Negro people. Just to use school, number one, it's for me, it was one of the best things that happened with this crazy so-called coronavirus when they stopped the schools. So we should have been basically reconditioning our children with the learning that we should have been doing. But here in Chicago, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, a mayor by the name of Mayor Emanuel closed 50 damn schools in Chicago at one time in all the black communities. Now, the key with that, I got on Blog Talk, I got on VON and stated, all of you damn teachers are out of work. Start your own schools now. Get in these churches, basements in your own homes and develop this yourself. You ain't working. What's stopping you? And did
you
not
see,
Eddie, man.
That's why you're part of this network. We're trying to network a group of people who have that very idea. And
mm-hmm.
the fact that if we can get like-minded people together, we can do all things. But we're following the wrong drumbeat. We've got to create our own drumbeat. No, their drumbeat came from ours. They stole it. But we got to take it back and use it for our benefit. You know, I was on another show today, and I had to just say to them, you know, we are following their narrative. They created this so-called virus. They spray us every day, poison water every day, poison our food every day. And we go along with it, and then we go to their hospitals, listen to their doctors, and believe what they say. So when somebody comes along and says, hang Fauci, okay, so people get very upset. And then they say Biden is being worse than Trump was and what he's doing right now. I mean, I've got families calling me now about how the Biden administration or the government, should I say, is arresting families and shipping them out of this country if they're black, if they're from Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
They're shipping them, and nobody's saying a word about it.
Oh, no. Worried about these aliens coming over here across the border, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Well, that's what I'm saying. If we organize, we can put a stop to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody coming out the sky to do this. We got to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
They'll come out the sky, but we got to do something. We can't sit back and let somebody else fight our battles.
Well, I love the sky. I love it. But the Jesus that a lot of people are stuck on is cool with me because, like, y'all know me, I'm the numbers. So Jesus is nothing but the nine. The nine is no more than the light. The light is no more than the information. Information is no more than the learning. That's what it's all about. They're going to stuck names on the information of learning that we're supposed to be getting from the light that's revealing. All of that's the nine. That's the Jesus, and we stuck on the word Jesus. And behind the word is the number that reveals all this shit. And we stuck on stupid because of their story about Jesus. They gave us the right number, but they put a character on the story, and we've been twisted ever since. The numbers, for me, my part, is to help set us right because the way I see it, nobody else is supposed to see it that way, but you see it a different way than the way that the story has been told to you, that lie that's been given, that we keep pushing, that ain't got us nowhere in 400-500 years.
Amen.
See.
Well, it's time, brothers. It's time.
All right. I need that time, and I'll get to talking about something else, dealing with numbers on another thing. So, you know, like I said, I connect the whole because I love Jesus. That I just don't give it the way everybody else gives it. I give it the way we all give it, and we don't see it that way because we don't see the number of Jesus. We don't even see the number of God. When we speak, do what they do, and when in Rome, do as the Romans do with Rome, it's 13. That's the God they're talking about. The God is in you, and you're understanding and overstanding. That's the damn God. That's the Rome. That's why they made this comp. Let me stop. This person called a Pope. Pope is 13. They just took all our numbers and attached it to their people or their stories that we follow even by saying when in Rome. The hell with Rome. Some made up fabric ass country that they came up with after being taught by us. Stop it. But like I said, it's all in the word of the number to be unraveled, decoded. And again, like I said, I just get my part, and my part is just a piece, because my part is only supposed to put in you that information that sparks that you never saw, because we never looked at it that way. That 13th, 14th Amendment that we keep talking about. When I hear it, I see it, that's not only the title of my book, but that is metaphysics. That is God and Jesus Christ. That is as above, so below. Those four numbers, 13, 14, turn them around, 31, 41, are the first four numbers of pi. That goddamn circle they got us in, y'all. We talking about all these numbers and don't see what they did as a whole. It's all in the Constitution, but it's in pi also. That's why it's a circle that never ends. The circumference of the diameter of a circle, never ending. Those damn numbers. That's what it's all about. And they put us right there in the amendment, the 13th and 14th Amendment. Pi, damn it.
Yeah, well, like you said, that's their amendment. It's ours.
They just call it theirs, but again, so we get attached to the word, let's look at the numbers. 13 is who we are. To God, that's 13. 14, it comes to Jesus Christ. 14 comes to so below, or it comes to no more than metaphysics. Those same words, metaphysics, are the numbers of 13 and 14. They just put the amendments behind it. We don't see the metaphysics in the number, and we get stuck to their story of what these damn amendments mean. The hell with it. The numbers lead us out of this shit. God leads us out of this shit. The Spirit leads us out. The revolution, it's all the same number. Know the number of these bastard-ass words that we use to keep us basically regurgitating the spell that we're in. We cast spells by these words because even by the number, we don't even see. For me, it's just that simple. That we're casting spells on ourselves using these words, not knowing the number, knowing their, like everything else we keep saying their, they damn definition. That's what gives the power. It's they damn definition. And we hold on to their definition of black, white, whatever the word is. The number, baby. Then you make and see your own reality. They done made theirs and we keep regurgitating it. If we don't see it no other way, we're going to keep using it, that word with that definition, that way with that frequency of a number that we don't even understand. See, we said it best. When we believe in things we don't understand, we don't know and understand these damn occultic words that are made up. We suffer. Ain't we suffering now? That's what we're talking about, the suffering we're going through. But this is why the words are so important. Words have power. We're learning the powers of words, not just by numbers, but by everybody else giving us their part of the puzzle to break this shit down. Like I said, I only have a very small piece. And I'm very happy to have the piece that I have. But again, I keep getting pieces from everybody else. And it gets me that they don't take what I give and utilize it to use it for themselves to see what they're seeing. So, again, like I said, I live vicariously through all my people, and I love the way the brother phrased that. When I say my people ain't all the people I'm talking to. My people are particular people dealing with the universe. That's the people I'm talking about. Because for me, people two, universe two, the same number. It's a universal mind. Mine is two. My mind is black. I don't get into that definition of black. Black is two. That's the universe is black. So all these other things, again, this is how we get caught up in debate about their definitions of words, because we don't have our own and we have nothing to basically have a foundation to explain or articulate the meaning of what we're giving, different from the program that we're in using these words over and over and over. That circle of pi, 13th and 14th Amendment, that's what we track these damn words with, these numbers that we can't figure out. They know, wrote it and put it right in front of us, sitting in plain sight. We've been staying and listening to that all our lives and still ain't figured it out. I need help with what I'm doing. Shit. This is a lot of shit to figure out, people. It's a lot of shit. That's why I learn every day, still learning. That's why I'm a good teacher, but I'm a better damn student because I'm still learning. With that, family, like I said, let me shut up. Does it sound like we got dead air? I might just be talking too much.
No, we're listening to you, brother. We're listening to you and Brother Ray.
That's why you're here, brother, and that's your purpose, and you are needed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your words are not falling on deaf ears. You know, we hear you.
No, they're not.
And, you know, and we've got to get the children to hear you. That's what organizations will do.
Set us our own university
to teach what you're talking about, not what they've been teaching us. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea what numbers were. I know nothing about that. Didn't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
To a large degree, I don't understand it right now,
mm-hmm.
but I'm learning. And I thank you for teaching.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's like you said, that's what we're supposed to do. If you care, you share. If you share, you teach. It's all the five. Care is five, share is five, teacher is five. This is why I say, stay, this is the year of the five, 2021. Stay on y'all five, because we're going to see how much deals with that five when we go to court. Court is five. See, so all this stuff that's happening is for a reason, but it's under five. It's definitely there. And we're sharing that thought. We're getting our interpretation together to where we could speak as one mind, one people, with a purpose, you know. And again, this is their fear. And I hate saying they, but I understand they by number, too, because when I say they, that's what I mean. They is no more than a mindset. Same number, different words. They have a mindset over our people. And this is what they're pushing. And our people are stuck in a particular mindset that they can't seem to get out. But it's understandable. It's comfortable. When you're comfortable, you're not going to move. It's when you're uncomfortable that you start wiggling. You get your butt up so you can get in a comfortable position. So that's what we're doing right now, making people uncomfortable in their comfort zone, because the comfort zone is no more than an illusion. As they say, you're getting comfortable before you get killed. And that's, we see where that's headed. But again, like we said, it's all for the children at the end of the day.
Yeah.
What we done is for the babies. You know, that's why our Wednesday night show, I got to admit, it's going to be great. Because I'm going to be talking about my trip to the Grand Canyon that I had to just stop. I'm still getting downloads from that. So that's beautiful. But then the previous show that you did 2 weeks ago, because we ain't been on for 2 weeks. And that show 2 weeks ago with the brother from Gaga or Gugu or whatever, you know who I'm talking about? The brother that you went off on that you was like, hey, no disrespect.
Off.
Oh, yeah, you even texted me.
I didn't go off on the guest. Not on the guest.
Yes,
I didn't go off on the guest. Not on the guest. No, it wasn't.
Okay,
I know what you're talking about. It was not on the guest.
Okay,
we're not
going to
talk about that on the air. We're not going to talk about it on the air. Who was the guest? The guest?
No.
I don't remember who the guest was, but no, Brother Eddie, it wasn't that. But we're not going to discuss that on the air.
No, yeah, it's a learning. No, this was. This is that part that you got into with him at the end of the show. No, that's not going to be discussing, unless people want to go back and listen to the show.
was going to be discussed is what I missed as being a teacher when I came in, because I came in on the tail end of listening, and I got emotional because he had went off and said something contradictory to you when he was talking about Jesus, and he was trying to get his little institution that he was pushing a $550 Zoom lecture that they had that Sunday.
Okay, that show.
I knew I would bring it back, and then he then he was disrespectful to Kwame. And then he started calling the family. What was that term? He called us ghetto. Right. So I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, so when I got on, I was emotional because he was very disrespectful to you and Brother Kwame. You know, so it took me off my mind of educating him on what Brother Kwame was talking about and what you were talking about. So we're going to talk about that because, like I said, I did a lot of reflecting, and I learned, you know, from me getting emotional that that's no way to teach. I can't teach because I lose track of everything that I'm trying to give because now I'm going to get into a debate that is not necessary. Because I had all of the ammunition I needed out of his mouth. That's the beauty of it. When you know number of words, give you the ammunition that you need to either shut them up or open them up, one or the other. They're either going to shut up or they're going to be open to receive what is being given. You know, so that's what we're going to be talking about because it was a good lesson learned for me. And it'll be a good one for when I give it back to Kwame once he tunes in and he hears it because it's part of what he was asking, the question that the guests kept avoiding. Every damn question Kwame asked, the question that I asked, he kept avoiding. Like, our questions didn't mean that he was pushing his narrative of this institution. So, but again, like I said, we didn't talk about that because it was a lesson learned and I got a lesson to share. So I think we all get something out of it. So, yes.
Yeah.
And, Brother Ray, I think I cut you off in the starting to gab because, again, like I said, I talk and I talk and I talk. So forgive me if I talked over you
talking about that situation. It's all good. But what you caused me to think about was this morning when I woke this morning like 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and I got up. I woke up thinking about a little girl who is the daughter of Betty Wright's daughter. And the child is Wright. She's about 7 years old. I gotta find out how she is. But she's a brilliant little girl. Now, when I woke up this morning, I meant to call her mother and just tell her she needs to get her in a math class at this age beyond what they're teaching them in school because she has the capacity to learn anything right now. And that was on my mind all day long. I'm going to call her tomorrow as soon as I think she's awake. I'm going to call her mother and tell her what I woke up with this morning and try to share her with you, Eddie. I'm going to see if her mother will call you so that you might be able to help her in her thinking.
Oh, that's great. And,
no problem, man.
That's the networking we got to do. We got to plug in where we're needed.
Yeah.
I have kids in the right mind with this rapping. And these school systems with all of their, you know, they're introducing this homosexuality into us and these radio shows. I mean, radio shows. One in particular here is Hot 105. It was the same that Found Joyner had. And I hated it because they all, in my opinion, all they were spewing out was ignorance to the people in a joke form. And now they got specials on doing out ignorance and promoting homosexuality. And we're sitting back, okay, and it's nice, it's good. And he's going to help the children. Give me We got to wake up. So thank you for that.
Ricky Smiley, Brother Ray, Ricky Smiley's nephew committed suicide.
Oh, boy. When is that?
So maybe that helped change it. You know, maybe, I mean, I hate to say it like that. That sounded terrible. Never mind.
So when did that happen?
It was in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, again, I don't know. I don't listen to the show. Like I told a friend of mine, the guy who does the commentary on the show, I cut. The only time I turn his show, that radio station on, is at 10 o'clock when James T. comes on, and he has kind of a spiritual approach to our music. And I turn him on at and when he goes off, I turn it off because I'm not going
to
put it on.
Yeah, and that's so true. And I listen to it when somebody directs me. You know, somebody says, oh, well, listen to this or, you know, something like that. You know, you should hear this or, you know, whatever, and then I'll listen. But other than that, I don't really listen to it because I don't have time. You know, I just, that's just too much.
Well, it's working, y'all.
I do have to tell y'all this. I'm sorry, Brother Ray.
No, I'm through. I just said we're coming together.
Yes, we are. I've got to let y'all know of a potential scam that is out there. I was on Facebook because I was on there to talk to my daughter. And someone has sent me a friend request, and they had, you know, a picture of one of my cousins on there. And so, you know, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe this is, you know, his sister or something like that, and I haven't seen him in about 30 years or more, so, you know, I don't remember. Because they were from the same, you know, they said they were from the same town as my cousin was from. So I accepted the request, and I was on there, and I was talking to my daughter on Facebook, and, you know, I got this instant message, you know, how are you doing? I hope everything's going well with you, and, you know, everything's going great with me. And, so I responded back, and, you know, oh, you know, hello, I hope you're well, and, you know, so forth, you know, just basic things. And so then they were telling me, oh, they were so happy that they had got $50,000 from the government through this loan that you don't have to, this grant that you do not have to pay for, pay back. Okay, well, that's good. And they said, oh, you should try it. You know, you should get it too. Well, I said, well, okay. I didn't even say okay. You know, it's like, and so they was telling me, it was like, you know, here's his number, call him. And I was like, call him, it's 11:30 at night. You know, I'm not calling nobody at this time of the night, you know, that I don't know. And, you know, I said, well, that's kind of late, you know. Oh, well, that's okay. You can call 24/7. Yeah, it's like, and I said to him, I said, well, that's really unprofessional. And, you know, it's like, no, he does call 24/7. You know, and you want to get your grant money. So I said, oh, well, what does he need? My social or my bank, you know, my bank account? No. He'll bring the money to you. So then I was like, oh, that's really unprofessional. You know, call him in the middle of the night and then he's going to bring the money to me. That's unprofessional. You know, she said, now that you want him to mail it and you can just give him your address. I was like, no. So anyway, I tried to call her and they didn't answer the phone. So afterwards, I looked up the name of this place, you know, where it said, and they had that a couple years ago that it was a scam. Well, after I was reading in the comments, and the same way how this person approached me was the same way how this other person was saying that they were approached. And when they tried to call the person through Facebook, they didn't get any answer either, but they kept trying to get them to call this number. So I said, okay, well, see, I wasn't calling anyway because, you know, to me the whole thing was unprofessional. You know, but they had a whole big thing on how this was a scam, so I'm just putting a FYI out there. If anyone tries to approach y'all that way, to be watchful on how you handle it. I mean, in my opinion, it's a scam. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You gave him 2 seconds more than I would have.
and you gave him no seconds that I would have, because I don't do Facebook. I don't do no social media. The closest thing is what we're doing right now on Blog Talk, and it's like on the phone.
Yeah.
But all social medias, I don't do. I don't care. My children are on it. That's y'all. I ain't got a page. Don't want a page. Don't put me on it. If I send you something, don't post my picture I sent you. This is for you. Not for no damn Facebook.
Right.
So, again, no,
yeah,
I don't put all of that.
I don't put
you know,
pictures on
like,
Facebook.
It's just like, for me, it's like a call. If I get a strange number, I don't answer. Leave a damn message. That's what the voicemail is for. If it's something important, leave a message. If it ain't important, you ain't going to leave a message.
That's
stop
right.
calling. See?
Yeah,
so
that's
I put things in this perspective, you know. So, again, no. We give it. I don't give nobody no time to come up with shit. I don't answer. I don't know you. Don't want to know you. If I need to know you, you gonna make that move and leave me a message. If not,
that's a good way to look at it, bro.
Oh yeah. Like I said, I started disconnecting a long time ago, before they even started this mess. So yeah, no. I don't even want you to get my voice recognition, me saying hello.
I got one more thing to say, and then I'm going to close my eyes for the night. Can you all,
hear
hear the birds around here, hear the birds through this phone?
No, I don't.
No, I can't.
I can't.
There are birds out here chirping like it's 7 o'clock in the...
Oh, I heard them now. Oh,
yeah.
That's unusual. Is the storm coming there, too? I know the storm is supposed to hit here tomorrow. It's supposed to be bad.
I told you, I don't know if I told you, Eddie, and told everybody about this, but I got hit with a 5G frequency, which was supposed to take me out. And it has altered. It has given me some problems since then. There's no question about it. But the birds used to perch on the wires across from my apartment in the evening by the thousands. And then all of a sudden, back in February, there were no birds. No birds. I said, what the heck is going on? No birds at all. So I just said, just tell you that there's something real strange going on in the atmosphere. And somebody in this group knows what it is, will share it with us. And I'm just putting it out there that that's what's happening right here as we speak.
You're in Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm in Miami.
What time is it there?
It's 2:30. What? 2:37.
No, it's 12:29, Brother Ray.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
Excuse me.
You added
at
one.
Okay.
No, I'm looking at the wrong numbers. I'm looking at the time. The time we've been on.
Okay.
But it is 12:30.
Birds chirping at that time. And again, we getting back into nature the way we should be. And for me to just give that to you is understanding that number of those words. Nature comes to 7, 25, 2 plus 5 is 7. Bird comes to 7, 16, 1 plus 6 is 7. So when the birds start acting funny, that's nature. Way of telling you, because you see this, see is 7, witness is 7, what you witness, what you see in nature is telling you. We got to start relating to these things, and we get it to our family. You just gave it to me, see?
Yeah.
So I see what I see in numbers. Now I put a exclamation point on what you just gave me by putting the numbers behind the nature of what we see and what we witness. By the number of what's being said. So, Brother, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Brother Ray, can I tell you with the cell phone tower?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Years ago, when they were putting up the cell phone towers, And they put one up across the street from where Brother Ray lives. And Brother Ray protested and everything and got that phone tower taken down. It was work, and he paid the price for it. And
absolutely.
As you can see, they put it back.
It was across the street from my building, a building that I owned at the time, that I was building. What I was building was an economic base. I had started to build an African marketplace, and I was teaching these young people how to buy and sell. And I did it through a thrift store. I didn't have to buy anything. They brought all the clothes to us, and I had the kids to set them up and stack them and, you know, prep them up and how to sell. They put up, they constructed a 200-foot antenna right across from my property. And then I'm a property owner, I'm a voter, and they never said anything to me, nor did they say anything to any of the other people around, but I was the only one that owned the property on that particular strip. And when they put it up, and I knew what antennas do, I went down and to the Environmental Commission to protest, and I was told by the chairman that, what I said in an audience of over 100 people, I said, you know, these antennas are dangerous, you know, they cause many problems among the people. Why don't you put the antenna out in the bay away from the population? And their answer was,
hello?
Yeah, he said, Brother Ray.
Hello, the answer
Brother
was,
Ray?
Did his call drop?
No, he's still here. Oh, no, Brother
we
Ray?
Can't hear you, Brother Ray. Man, he was in the answer was, and I was waiting for the answer. Man.
Yeah, Brother Ray.
The 5G across the street. No, it's the 5G across the street. They heard what he was going to say, and they cut him off. That's the 5G.
Yeah, he's still on here, but we just can't hear him.
Yeah,
you don't believe it. I'm just joking. The reason why it's late and everything, I couldn't get in. And then even when I would get in, I couldn't do anything on the board. You know, would tell me that the system was problem with the system. And I had the hardest time.
That's why I said what I said earlier on the show. Write it down, y'all.
I still don't like that. Brother Ray just dropped.
He probably found out that we couldn't hear him. If he could hear us, we don't even know if he could hear us, and he was probably still talking, and didn't know that. But anyway, Sugar, you go on here because you know had two nights in a row, and I heard your voice crackling earlier. So
I was running the temperature and everything. I was running the temperature earlier.
Okay.
Okay, folks. Well, we're going to close out, and I'm going to call and check on Brother Ray. Don't forget Drive Ons on Sunday for the Helios Filios at 10 a.m. Don't forget the drumming at Eastern Time, no matter where you are in the world, at 3 o'clock Eastern Time to be drumming. And with that, we're going to say goodnight.
And Wednesday night show will be in a minute or down the road, family, in a minute. What's going to happen to you in a minute, or will it happen down the road? So that's what we're going to be into Wednesday night show or class.
Yes.
I prefer to call it a class.
Yes.
So
that's going to be good. So I'm looking forward to that. So y'all have a good night, have a good weekend, and be safe. Okay, y'all.
Peace, family.